Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Can you believe it? We're still doing it. I'm Rhys Darby. Of course, with me, the usuals.
Hello.
Usual number one.
Usual number two.
The usuals. That's a great name for a band, actually. This is crazy. I can't even remember. I've lost count of how many episodes we've done now. This is how unprecedented this is, this streak of runs.
I think it's five. Are we on five?
No. Is it?
Is it?
I think so.
It's number
five. I think it is. I think it is. We've broken last week's record.
Oh, it's amazing. I'm applying right now as I speak for the world records.
Are you? I've actually spoken to the editor-in-chief of the Guinness World Records. He's very interested to see where this goes. He's said, thanks for getting in contact. Four's a very impressive number, but it's not quite 4,000. But, you know, keep me up to date and we'll see. So it's very exciting.
I'm excited about that. And we have to talk about the Schreiber in the room, which is the fact that Dan, for the listeners, Dan is, he's in complete black background. Are you in the dark? What's going on, Dan?
I'm sitting in a children's playground in a field in Cornwall.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, oh, my God.
It's 9:22 at night here, and we're on holiday in Cornwall.
Black. It's pitch black.
Are you wearing an anorak?
Yeah, I've got a big...
He's wearing an anorak, holding a microphone lit by the screen of his laptop. That doesn't look dodgy at all in a kid's playground, does it?
I had to, because we're staying in a hotel and they don't have any rooms for me to record this in. I had to warn everyone who works in the hotel that there's going to be a man in the kid's playground talking about Bigfoot. And it's gone round the whole hotel. And just before I left, they gave me a torch. So I've got a torch.
This is crazy.
And it's cool. It's so cool.
Can you shine the torch on some stuff so we can see? We can literally see nothing but this figure. And I want to see what's around you. Oh, there's some lights, some slight lights coming. So you're in the playground.
I'm in the playground.
But there's no street lights or anything. It is like completely pitch black. Oh my God, this is like a horror film.
Can you see this guy?
Wow.
This is a giant frog.
Oh my God.
Look at it.
That's a freaky looking giant frog right next to you there. That's definitely...
What kind of a playground, is this? There's giant frogs. That's a scary looking frog.
Well, you know what playgrounds are like. It's probably something you ride on, is it?
Yeah, you go through its mouth. You go through a big mouth.
Terrifying. Oh my God. This doesn't sound like a playground. It sounds like a horror park. You get consumed by a giant frog. Then you get shat out the ass of a goat. And then what next?
Well, I think Dan's outdone you this time, Buttons, with his location.
Really
in the
is.
Past, you were the one who used to record inside cars or cafes or in the middle of a, I think you're in a Bunnings at one point.
That's right.
But this takes it to the next level in the middle of the night in complete darkness in a dodgy playground. Well done, Dan.
Well done.
Thank you. And it's very scary. Lots of nature is coming up. A cat came up earlier that I didn't see until I heard the rustling next to me, and I pointed the torch, and this huge happened next to me. And there's lots of bird activity over the top. I mean, it's a pretty odd and mysterious place, Cornwall. So it's, you know, the Beast of Bodmin Moor. Have you heard of that? The big cat of Bodmin Moor.
Yeah.
That's a 45-minute drive from where I'm sitting right now.
So that cat could have been the Beast of Bodmin Moor.
It could have been the daughter of, maybe not fully grown just yet. It might just be an infant. You know, there's an owl man of Cornwall as well, like the Mothman.
Yes, I've heard of this, yeah.
Yeah, he exists. There's the Nessie equivalent of Cornwall, which is only a 45-minute drive that way. It's called Morgwar, and there's Morgwar Mile, where all the sightings happen, only 45 minutes that way.
You've got all going on, man, and you're in a haunted playground.
And I'm in a haunted playground with a giant ceremonial frog for sacrificing children. It's
amazing. This inspires me to take this season to new levels where we should try and report or do our segment of the show from somewhere weird. And now you've got me thinking about where I could go here in the States.
Well, hang on.
Without...
I just built a studio. I just finally got myself sorted out, built a cryptid studio. I got all this old junk here for, and now you're saying we're going to go out and about.
No, not you. You should be the one who stays in a studio. You've got all the buttons and knobs to deal with.
Yeah, good point.
You're the one who, you've got to stay put. You've got too much machinery. We're the field reporters.
Oh, okay. That's fair enough. Well, you know, next week we expect something very, very impressive from you, Rhys.
Oh, well, you know, I can't promise you anything, but... In a nutshell, listeners, that has been this week's issue of the three-way Vibus update. See what I did there? I'm trying to keep the Vibus update going.
Yeah.
I've written it on a pad so I remember to say it. We don't really talk about the virus, but, you know, that's because talk of it is dwindling. I've heard from people in the UK, a couple of my mates who say, it's not on the news so much anymore. Isn't that odd?
Well, it's just not as popular as it once was.
It's still horrific and it's still out there, but people are like, you know what? We've got to start talking about other things. Otherwise, we're never going to get through the year.
Well, that's why we're here. That's why we're five episodes in.
Absolutely.
Do you know why? I've got it. They're not talking about the virus as much because we're out there now and they're talking about us instead.
Are they?
It might be.
You sure?
We're on all the news outlets.
We're disrupting the news flow.
We interrupt this virus update to give you the cryptid factor update. They're back at it again. In an uncountable number of episodes in a row, the three have joined each other in various parts of the world, now in a complete darkness, dodgy children's playground with a BBC microphone.
I love it. An uncountable number. Only uncountable because they can't remember.
Guinness World Records said to be meh. That's sort of interested.
Possible records on the way. I don't know why I turned into a BBC reporter there myself. But the other exciting news we've got this week, folks, is we've got an actual real-life interview.
Yes.
How exciting.
Isn't that weird? We haven't done that for years.
I know.
So this chap, Paul Terry, got in touch with us. He has released a great book. I will say not just great, absolutely fantastic. I've got it with me here, and it is called The X-Files, The Official Archives. This has just come out, and I'll read a little bit from the blurb here. The Official Archives offers fans the chance to pore over autopsy results, mugshots, newspaper clippings, pages ripped from books on the occult, security camera printouts, and more. It's the top 50 cases that involve Monsters of the Week, cryptids, from the beginning right through to the end of X-Files, which is, you know, if that ever really does end. And the amount of detail in this book is phenomenal. It's exactly the sort of thing, if you're a fan, that you'd have on your coffee table and you would just pore over any time you felt the need, which if you're a big fan would be, you know, probably every day. So I was going to be excited to speak to him very soon in this episode about how this thing came into being.
That's interesting, isn't it? Because they've had some fantastic monsters and creatures on there. A lot of real cryptid creatures that they have featured on the X-Files and have used as, I guess, material for the show. And they've had some amazing actors play some of those creatures, haven't they?
Yes.
I see where you're heading with this.
I just want to know if there's any bias towards this book and your review of it. Because to be open and honest with the viewers.
Listen.
Top 50, right? These are the top 50.
Absolutely. But I will look. There isn't. And I will tell you why. And I've got a little qualm with the guy. When we come to that point, I will divulge my qualm. Which is another great band name. Divulge my qualm. but more about that later when we interview.
I thought that was that late night TV show that you started.
Divulge my qualm.
Divulge my qualm.
Late night edition.
Season 3 of that was great. It was so sexy.
My qualm got so divulged that I had to actually go and get it looked at.
Wow.
I rubbed some ointment on it, and it flares up every.
Does it?
I don't know whether you saw the third season, but it was almost an inflatable thing that you could all sit on in the pool. Such a qualm. Yeah.
Third season. Divulge my qualm. It's had 3 seasons.
Not many people know about that. Not because I can't talk about it. It's you can't divulge. That's one of the first rules of the show.
That's the sad thing. Bad PR. Diverge my qualm, same PR agent as coronavirus. None of it's getting any media now. I've got a very exciting X-Files fact, my favorite X-Files fact to tell him later. So watch out for that as well, listeners. Oh,
and also, I think I have spotted in the book quite an Easter egg, a Rhys Darby Easter egg.
A Rhys Darby? Really?
A Rhys Darby.
Oh, no, not with your terrible titles again. I told you, Dan, it's not your forte. weren't you kicked off the poetry circuit back in 98? Honestly, Schreiber, please stop coming to these events, all right? All right, let's get on with the news.
Okay.
Weekly World Weird News.
Crazy, freaky, watch out.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I couldn't go past this week's jetpack news without talking about
that
it.
That was going to be my news.
Yeah, I was it now. Oh, but you knew. You must have known that I had to be the one to have a chat about this.
I had backup news, to be honest, because I knew you being in LA and you being into jetpacks, no doubt would jump all over this story.
So I'm sure all the listeners know about this, but if you did not know, two pilots spotted a real-life rocketeer while coming into land at Los Angeles International Airport on Sunday. Yeah, that's right. A man flying a jetpack at 3,000 feet. This is the weird thing, because that's really high, even for a jetpacker. So two planes were coming in, LAX, you know, one of the biggest airports in the world, and suddenly someone sees a dude off his wing at the 3,000-foot mark coming into land, and it's a dude in a jetpack, and he's like, you guys see this guy in a jetpack off to the left here? And there was another, that's an actual recording. of course.
Amazing how you get this stuff.
Another plane coming in, and there's another dude, another pilot. Roger that. I got a guy in a jetpack off to my right side. You got that? I got eyes on that. That's how they talk.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
The weirdness is they don't know, you know, what sort of jetpack this was. There's the famous Vez Rossi experimental winged jetpack, which could be capable of this type of height. However, any flights that this has done in the past has usually been done in a high-profile manner, because it's sort of marketing how good it is, and it's also done in remote areas. The fact that this was done near an airport, highly illegal because of the airspace and highly dangerous, really begs the thought of who was it, or was this a spaceman from another dimension? Yeah. Thoughts, guys?
Wow. Yeah. This is LA, did you say?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, this is kind of tech territory, right? Like, this could be a sort of Elon Musk-esque billionaire sort of just flaunting a new invention and thinking, screw it, I'll just do it out in the open. I mean, it, you know.
True.
This could be a whole new jetpack.
And I agree. But I think because it was only 300 foot away from these aircraft, I mean, they clearly were flying it in a zone where they would know that there were commercial aircraft coming in. So it was almost that they were showing off, right? Because you wouldn't.
Yes.
If you had gone to the effort to build a jetpack, you're clever enough to know where the airport is and where the planes are coming in. And so you wouldn't go there and go to that exact altitude and be only 300 foot off the wing if you were sort of trying to go, hey, look at me, I'm in a jetpack.
But that's insanely close, right?
Yeah, 300 foot.
Did they see him with a giant map holding up sort of the flight paths? Because how would you judge that? That's insane.
Well, no, I think he had Google Maps.
Google Maps. It still doesn't work.
Not at that height.
Flight paths change all the time.
Well,
you know?
Do. That's actually a really good point. They do.
The one of the pilots was reported saying, only in LA. Like, they literally, so they sort of took a little joke on it. They didn't get really angry. And I like your point, Buttons, too, of the fact that there's no way they didn't know where they were. So, and with all the press that this has gained, it's got to be a marketing
stunt
of some sort. Yeah.
Stunt.
So I think it will come out in the next few days or week as to who this was and what type of jetpack it was, because people are like, wow, 3,000 feet up. Because I think the record now for it's not so much the height of these things, it's the longevity of how they can stay up. And I think the best they've come up with is about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And back in the day, in the late 60s, when James Bond was getting around in a jetpack, you were looking at a maximum of 30 seconds of flight time there. So it has got better, but it's still that futuristic item. We're all going, okay, when can we go down to Target or Walmart, you know, and pick one of these puppies up?
Yeah, it does. It also does make you think of a kind of future scenario where instead of bird strikes that planes are getting, they're sort of jetpack strikes.
Yeah,
you know, like Miracle on the Hudson. You know, Sully Sullenberger
having
multiple jetpackers smash into the screen of his plane. Like
What I want it to get to is the point where if these things do get really user friendly, why can't we then attach them to the seats of planes? And so if there is any issue, you just push a button you know, you shoot off from your seat, and every passenger has a jetpack situation, so they can they can safely get away from a plane that's going down. That type of thing.
That would be ironic, wouldn't it? Everybody jetpacking out of a plane to save themselves after a plane hit a jetpacker.
A jetpacker got in the way.
Who may have jetpacked out of a plane that was in trouble.
This is your captain speaking. We have a jetpack in the way here. We're going to ask you all to please immediately emergency jetpack out of the plane. The plane is going down due to a jetpack.
I'm confused. What's going on?
Just use your jetpack to get out, because there's a jet...
So who's jetpacking? Are we jetpack?
Everybody jetpack now. There's a jetpack in the way.
Is that me?
No, not you. You go as well. Everybody.
Am I going dead?
Yes, everybody jetpack now. Oh, fuck it. I'm just jetpacking.
Yeah.
Shoo, 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 shoo.
If
Fuck, there was a Yeti on that plane. That, wow. You never know. You never know with these stories. You just Yeti. Never.
I can't wait for this future. This future sounds awesome.
Meanwhile, all the jetpackers jetpacking out of the plane collide with the plane behind,
exactly.
forcing that plane, and it becomes a conga line
of jetpacking
tragedies.
Boom, boom, boom. Everybody jetpack, everybody jetpack.
Do you know what, though? At some point, somebody's going to have to go, why are we still in planes? Everybody's got jetpacks.
That's the moment. That is the moment that happens, Buttons. That's right. When someone realizes, all right, let's just ditch that massive thing that all the jetpackers are in. We're all just jetpackers now, guys. All right, let's move on.
Okay. Well, to follow up that, we haven't done headlines, so we won't. I'll just follow that up with... is a story.
Yeah, we've moved on from headlines.
We've moved on
this week.
From headlines this week. But my backup story to that was still another person in the air story. But this one was a 3-year-old girl who luckily survived. Just to get that out there at the start of the story.
Oh, good, because you're known for your sad stories. I was going. Oh, here we go.
Ruin them. Bring the vibe down. A 3-year-old girl survived a wild sky ride caught in the tail of a giant kite. And there's video of
this. Yes, I
video.
Heard about this.
Yeah, no. So it was in Taiwan, and it was at the International Kite Flying Festival.
I'm glad that was still on this year.
I know. Yeah, it's the one event that coronavirus didn't take down.
To be honest with you, they're thinking about it. They're saying, you know what? It's up in the air at the moment as to whether we can do it.
Anyway, this somehow a little 3-year-old girl got entangled in the tail of this ginormous kite, and she was taken more than 100 foot, 30 meters in the air. And she was in the air for almost 30 seconds.
Wow, that's like jetpack time from the 60s.
So here we go. That
wow.
Is not a kite. That is a little girl stuck on the tail of a kite. So she was 30 seconds up in the air like that until they got control of the kite and brought her back down to the ground. The Holy thing that moly. I want to point out with that is... look at the other kites that are up there.
Oh,
there's like
yeah.
astronaut kites. There's like massive squid kites. There's two astronaut kites. Somebody, when I first saw this picture, I was like, is nobody going to mention the fact that there is giant astronauts flying through the air? And then I realized that they were actually kites at the same time.
That was probably going to be the headline story of the day. As they took that photo, they thought, got a good shot of these astronaut kites. And then suddenly... old 3-year-old pops up into the air.
Are you sure they're not jetpack men, those astronaut I mean, they could be. But I've got to say this. That girl, she's quite high up there. That must have been absolutely horrific for the parents.
Oh, yeah. They were running after the kite, obviously. And
was she tangled up in it?
Yeah. She got tangled in the tail. But quite hilariously, you can see in the video, I mean hilarious.
In a horrific way, yeah.
Horrifically, hilariously, everybody, the whole crowd was sort of underneath the tail of the kite running around.
Oh, ready to catch her. Yeah,
her. And so they're all sort of looking up, running around, bumping into each other and tripping up.
That's the type of humanity I love. That's we do that, and, you know, it's when people jump out of buildings as well and we try and catch them. We our honest instinct of good human nature comes in, and we want to save each other, and I love that. Yeah. And I love that she survived, and if we were in a field and this happened, we'd all do the same. We'd all run like hell to group around and try and catch this poor wee thing. So
Do you remember, I think it was 2 years ago, there was that little child that was hanging over the edge of a building. It had gone over the edge. It's in France. Oh, yeah. And a dude, it's on footage, scaled the side of the building up all these floors and got him and put him back over. And he got given French citizenship for his actions. The French Spider-Man, they called him.
Wow.
And it was extraordinary. And everyone was at the bottom waiting to catch him. And the reason that he was over the edge is the kid's dad had gone out to get some groceries really quickly, was on his way home, hurrying home, when suddenly he noticed on his phone there was a really rare Pokemon for Pokemon Go around the corner. Yeah, so he disappeared to find this Pokemon.
Oh.
And in that time, the kid found himself over the side of the balcony.
But did he get the Pokemon, and which one was it?
That's the bit of the story that regrettably they did not report on. I'm still trying to follow that up.
Yeah. Thank you. If you could update us next week, Dan, that would be really, really helpful. Thank you.
All right, what do you have, Dan?
My story this week is that Italian flat earthers have completed a mission to the edge of the world.
What?
Yep.
Oh, no, they were right. Oh, this was my biggest fear.
Yep.
Outside of ghost children coming out of frog spouts, that was also another big fear. But this is the other big fear.
Sorry, I just had a freaky noise near me.
Oh.
Did you actually?
Oh, no, genuinely. That was really scary. What was that?
I so want to see you get dragged away. That would be horrifying, but also hilarious.
We know also that Dan does scare easily. Remember that mission we went on for the Thunderbirds?
Yes.
When you suddenly pulled the car over, because you heard some howls, remember? So you pulled the car over and you wanted us to all suddenly get out. And I'll never forget Dan's face. He's like, what? No, we're not getting out.
Go, drive.
We happen to have this on audio, and I think you'll find, Mr. Darby, that you petrifyingly screamed.
Oh, did I scream?
Reese going, ah! So I definitely was scared. But anyway, flat earthers complete their mission to the edge of the world. I neglected to mention unsuccessfully in the headline there. They were attempting to do it from Sicily. They believed that they could reach the edge of the world by traveling 60 kilometers to a place called Lampedusa, which is the south of Sicily. So they set off in their boat, and it was a total disaster. They ended up in a place called Ustica. They were tired, thirsty, and they were on the brink of shipwreck. And if you look on the map, which I just did before we started the show, you've got Sicily, where they thought the edge of the world was below Sicily. They somehow managed to go north of Sicily, completely on the other side of the island.
No.
They used a compass to get there, which obviously is a bizarre choice for flat earthers, given
they don't believe in them.
Yeah, terrestrial magnetism is the basic principle of a compass. So they use that. So they landed, and the local mayor got told about this, and basically they got put into quarantine because they did this during COVID. So it was highly illegal.
No.
They were not meant to be doing this.
Oh,
so these flat earthers were put into their boat where they were told to quarantine, but they made an escape. And they spent 3 hours escaping. But because they were such bad navigators, they basically circled around and landed back where the Coast Guards were, sort of like sailed into the people looking for them. So they were arrested once again and put into quarantine, arrested with quotation marks. They were taken and put away and said, you have to sit here. But they still didn't want to sit. So they escaped again. And this time they bumped into a guy who they ended up living with, who was a guy who told wild lies and said he was COVID positive. And he had all these mad theories. So they had to escape him. And
They were then is a great plot to a movie.
Yeah. Are you sure you're not reading a draft script from some? It's amazing.
So they escaped him and were caught again. And eventually they were just literally returned home to where they lived, which is Veneto. And that was done by land. No more sea for them. So, it was a story of lockdown, flat earthers, edge of the world, and
quarantine
navigation.
Escapers.
Yeah.
Wow. Truth deniers.
I can just hear that whole story being told in my head to the tune of the Benny Hill music.
Well, you know, that's a great point. I think the whole flat earthing community should have the soundtrack of Benny Hill underneath it at all times. Because that's how mad it is.
Oh my God.
My favorite flat earther story was a guy who showed conclusively that we live on a flat earth by taking a spirit level with him on a commercial air flight. He was up in the air flying over America somewhere, and he has all these pictures and videos of him with a spirit level going, so how come it's still level? What's going on? And when they traveled back down to earth, it remained level the whole way through, and that was his proof.
Oh, come on.
And he's right. It's flat.
Yeah. But honestly, I mean, there's science deniers and then there's thick as pig shit. And it's just, you know, it's hard to live in a world where there's so many idiots. In fact, I'm going to put the theme on now, that only they deserve. I'll do a version of it. And then you can also play the real thing if you get the rights.
No, we're going to do your one. You should be considered an official instrument. That was amazing. What instrument do you play? I play the Rhys Darby. that was amazing.
I don't know why I know that theme so well, but you know.
That was incredible.
All right. Well, it must be just about time for our big interview. I'm a bit nervous.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here we are with our first official interview of this season. Please give a warm welcome to Paul Terry.
Hey.
That's the sound of 2.5 guys clapping.
You can't hear it, Paul, but there's thousands of people welcoming you right now.
In the audio world, there'll be so many listeners clapping. Stop clapping, everyone. Please, calm down. Take your seats. Now, Paul, great to have you on the show. Congratulations on this fantastic book. I have it right here in my hands. Is it actually available in the shops yet, or did I get a very advanced copy?
You did get a very advanced copy. It's out on September 15th. And actually, you got a copy before I did.
Really?
This is a real classic thing sometimes in publishing. The author's copies find their way via a black hole in a warehouse. That it's an X-File in itself. Like how they've not reached me. And I did a stock signing at a shop in Dark Delicacies in Burbank last night, and I saw them for the first time. So they were going, "Oh, it's your book." And I'm like, "Yeah, can I just look at it for a second?" So,
you haven't looked from one author to another. I've got to say, isn't it amazing when you see that hard copy, that real thing that you've created in the shops? There's nothing like it. It's better than a newborn baby, just quietly. It's like, wow, look, and there's more than one. There's a lot of them. And then you come back a couple of months later, oh, they're all still here. And you go, excuse me, are they selling? But it's just an amazing feeling, isn't it? I'm just going to read a little bit about this thing here. So it's 50 cases of cryptids, biological anomalies, and parapsychic phenomena. From Fluke Man to Pusher to Guy Man is mentioned. I mean, in the thing here, which, you know, classic.
Who's that? Who's that guy?
Whatever, guys.
Paul, just this book, Rhys was so passionate about getting you on to interview you, and we're not sure why. We can't figure it out. Could you shed any light on that for us? It's like
I'm more shocked than you guys, to be honest.
Factor
about, you know, an X-File book about cryptids and Guy Mann being mentioned is such a random name. I don't even know what maybe Rhys can, you know, shed some light.
Yeah, Rhys, shed some light, Rhys.
Let me shed some skin. Some light on. You know, all the listeners know that I did wonderfully get the opportunity of playing that character in one of the later seasons of this fantastic, phenomenal show. But look, this isn't about me. This is about your amazing creation here, Paul, the amount of detail into this book. And I know a lot of the listeners are going to get it. But can you just go through how long this thing must have taken? Because this is insane.
That's the best word for it. It is insane. It was an insane idea. It was actually just after season 10 was announced, the limited series, which of course you're in. And I just had an idea, and I contacted 20th Century Fox, and I said, I pitched the book in 2015. I said, you know, X-Files is coming back. You know what book X-Files fans would really want? The X-Files, the actual X-Files.
Oh, my God. It's obvious.
And he said that. He went, yeah, why haven't we done that? And I went, I don't know. Let's do that. Then it basically, as I say, as one author to another, you know that these things get flirted with by various publishers. And then it was one of those random moments at, of all places, of course, San Diego Comic-Con. And I'd met this guy, Eric Klopper, for the first time, who worked at Abram Books. And I just felt the moment and said, do you like The X-Files? And his eyes went crazy wide, because I didn't realize he probably is more obsessed with the show than me and any other fan. He wrote to the government in his teens asking for disclosure of things. He was 100,000% all in. And he just looked at me and said, yes, what is it? And I went, the X-Files, the actual case files in an in-world book. And within a few months, I was contracted to the book at the end of 2017.
Wow.
So, crazy journey.
So cool.
What it does is people already believe the X-Files show is pretty much a real thing. Like it crosses over into real life with so many of the folklore on the cryptids and the monsters and obviously UFOs and aliens. And so because it crosses over from fiction into nonfiction so many times, it has a belief structure behind it for the fans that is second to none. And so what you've effectively done here is made the world of the X-Files even more real, to the point where, I mean, these documents, if you have a look at just anything from the Federal Bureau of Intelligence there, with all the, you know, with the actual official stamp at the top, bits blocked out, you could swear that, you know, this is the genuine stuff. There's like clips, there's like little paper clips. Dude, it's just, I'm gushing about it because it's the type of book I really love, because I'm an Indiana Jones fan. And once the Indiana Jones, his kind of diary came out, there was someone published that, and it went through the same kind of, had the same kind of look and feel of, you might have just picked up Indiana Jones's actual diary, you know, that's leather bound, and you go through and you see the notes of his adventures. Yeah, dude, I just want to say congratulations on what I would call pretty much a masterpiece. For
it's funny you mentioned the Indiana Jones connection, because of course one of the tasks was to find these paper props, you know, photographs, whatever was used on camera for the episodes. And I got to go to this warehouse in this secret, crazy, you know, crazy secret location, and literally it was like an aircraft hangar, just like the end of Raiders.
Wow.
And see, you know, I piled into this project as a big, you know, nerdy fan of all the stuff that you guys love, and of course the X-Files. But I didn't think that these paper props had been stuffed in warehouse boxes for 20 plus years. They hadn't seen oxygen, hadn't seen the light of day.
Wow.
So it was this crazy process of digging through. I gave the archives team at Fox are incredible, and I gave them my wish list after rewatching the whole show again and making loads of notes about what was on camera, what I thought could legitimately be in the field report. That was the crucial thing. And they kindly said, well, there's these boxes which may have stuff in them, but we didn't archive stuff back in the day like we do now digitally. So that was probably the most exciting part as a fan.
Wow.
Going through these dusty boxes with the gloves on, the classic gloves, pulling out things and going,
oh, wow.
Oh, it's an X-ray of from the werewolf episode. Tick, put that on the list.
Wow.
And doing that for several weeks, and then texting my editor going, you won't believe what's in here, because he was based in New York, and him freaking out as a fan going, I want to be there now. And I'm like, sorry, dude, classified access, you know.
Amazing. And that's once incredible. Again, you've crossed over into the reality of the fiction, which is blurring the boundaries, which is what the book does.
What was the most interesting monster for you to properly go research heavy on that you thought, God, there's way more to this than I realized?
Outside of Guy Man, of course. We'll just put Guy Man to the side.
Yeah.
How are we
spelling Guy Man? Is it G-U-Y? Is it just G-U-Y? Guy Man?
And then, yeah, so that's the, because right. He's a human for the first time. So they just use the two words Guy and Man. And
so
man,
when you were young,
two,
you were a boy Guy Man?
You haven't even seen the episode, have you, Dan?
No, I remember. I remember the episode. It's got the only. It's got the only actual kind of sex scene with Gillian Anderson with Dana Scully in it, and Reese is the man having sex with Scully, which was terrible for the fantasy part of anyone's head. If you know Reese,
completely unplanned segue, but brilliantly done, Dan. Is that one of the funniest things to find was those sketches of the guy man in his original lizard form character, which were drawn by Gillian Anderson's daughter Piper for the show. And so I wanted to find those in the archives, and there they be.
You're Look kidding. That's Gillian Anderson's daughter. That is amazing.
No, that she did the sketches. That's not her.
But yeah, that particular, not because it's Reese, but that particular case file was that it was obviously people at Fox and the Archives team loved that episode too. It was one of the favourites of that season. To your question, Dan, it's hard to pick one because the writing in character, I think, was probably the hardest thing and the most fun thing because you really have to listen and watch the show in a completely different way. You have to listen, you know, the classic voiceover where Scully's doing a draft of her report or Mulder is or whoever it is. And then weaving that into what would they report? What things would they maybe leave out? How were the relationships with, you know, the bosses at the time, with Skinner or with any of the higher ups? It's just that part of it was really challenging. And the cryptids of it all, I mean, I'm a huge cryptid fan. I love the Big Blue episode with the kind of Lake Champlain champ or the Nessie type creature. That was really fun finding the map of the lake and just the cool props like that were just, you know, really cool. And there was a dog called Queequeg on the show briefly, which was Scully's pet dog. And there was this one photograph in the props folder of the little dog next to this, what was a fake monster footprint. And I just thought for the fans, we have to put that in. And I justified it by saying something in the case file like, okay, this photograph was included with Queequeg to show scale. So the pet dog is showing scale of the fake monster footprint, which is kind of a red herring in the episode. But so stuff like that was just, you know, a cryptid fan's dream come true.
That's amazing. When we started recording this episode, Paul, Reese let us know how excited he was to talk to you, but he did also mention that he had a bit of a bone to pick.
Oh, yeah.
Just, Reese.
A qualm.
A qualm. He had a qualm.
I wish to divulge my qualm.
I will prepare to receive said qualm.
The only qualm I have, I think I might have the answer as to why you neglect to do it, but there's no photo of me in this book. You've got the picture of the monster, you know, you've got the drawings. Not a single photo of the Darbmeister in one of his big acting jobs. You've got Kamal here. Ninjani,
who was great in that.
I was thinking about it. It must be because did my agents say something like, "Look, it's going to cost you. You want a picture of the Darbmeister? You're looking around the 25G mark, my friend."
But I hate to be this nerdy and this authentic to the project, but as I said at the top of the show, and this is absolutely true. This is the only reason there's not a photograph of Guy Man in the book is because. If you rewatch the episode with this in mind, Scully, you know, met him briefly in the shop, but never, there was no questioning appreciation, no photograph, no security camera footage captured of him. And it's actually part of the episode. They do talk about that, well, who is this guy?
That's what I thought would be the other reason if it wasn't the, that I've overcharged yet again. I get on the phone to my wife, Rosie, come on. The guy's just trying to make a book. I make a buck.
I'd have loved that to be the reason. I'd have followed that through. I'd have followed that through to the bitter end. Yeah,
but thankfully it isn't.
There's a little Easter egg which whether you've seen Reese.
Here we go.
It might make up for the absence of.
Paul, do you mind if I try and spot the Easter egg? Because at the start of the show, the other thing that I pointed out is that I think I spotted an Easter egg.
And can we call it what it is? A Reister egg. Could you please, Paul, have some respect? It's a Reister egg.
Not another Reister egg.
On this show.
I'd love Buttons to take a shot because I think he's got it.
Okay. Do I get a prize? Do I get a book to author? Because out of the four of us, the one thing that I've noticed that one of these things isn't like the other, because it seems I'm the only one who hasn't authored a book. So
that is true. Because
the book sent to you buttons. That's what I'll do. If you get it right.
There you go.
Oh, okay, here we go. So at the very end of the reports, at the very, very last part of intel in the file for Guy Man is a report from 2015, a pre-report that has been linked to the file from a person who says that they saw a type of monster, and the name of that person is M. Ledbetter.
M. Ledbetter.
Oh, my God. Mary Ledbetter from my Short Poppies show.
Yes.
It may or may not be. Put it this way. How could I resist, you know, putting something like that in from, you know, a possible other eyewitness that was that maybe happened to be in the area, maybe on a trip. I don't know. But I just thought, you know what?
Brilliant.
For another, as you say, what was it? A Easter egg. I love that.
Easter egg.
I could not resist. That was one of my favorite things to sneak in there. So.
You know what I have to do now? I have to do the voice. I have to read this out. This is Mary Ledbetter. Here we go. I found myself, unexpectedly, I might add, in the quaint little town of Xiuhuan, Aragon. Okay. That's when I got a good look at it. It was a very curious thing, all green and scaly, and kind of jaunting through the woods. Not running, just jaunting. A very jolly monster, whatever it was.
And I told
to complain.
Brian, go chase that, will you, Brian?
Wow. Brian!
So obviously that was terrifying for me to write, but hear you say it. Did I pass as in writing?
You did. That was absolutely perfect, dude.
Yeah. Like, so what was the deal?
So there was a TV series that was produced by a fantastic production company.
Run by Leon.
Run by me. That Reese wrote and starred in, called Short Poppies. And it played on Netflix, and so it had an international release. And in that, Reese plays six different characters.
And it's actually
eight,
nine.
Seven,
but who's
nine,
counting?
Eight, seven. He plays lots of characters because, you know, we're not good at counting on this show. And one of them's Mary Ledbetter, who is a busybody older lady. And she is exactly the person who would, A, get the chance to see a cryptid. And B,
definitely call a radio station about it. Yeah, yeah.
I'm very impressed that you spotted that, and therefore, I'm true to my word. I will get the publisher to wing a copy of the book.
Oh,
that's great!
Thank you.
You're in
so
for a treat,
much,
Buttons.
Nice. Yay.
It's got me wanting to watch the X-Files from the start again, yet again, for the second time.
Can I do my big exciting X-Files fact?
No,
yes, let's do it.
Well, it's just my favorite X-Files fact, which is that, and you probably know this already, Paul, but Michael Bublé was meant to be in the X-Files.
Oh,
what?
Yeah, but he was fired. He was fired because he stole a hot dog off the craft service table.
What?
No.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Dan.
This is pre-fame for Bublé. This is when he was trying to make it, and he was an up-and-coming musician, and he was trying to do some acting jobs. So he was an extra hired to work in the background of an X-Files episode, and he took a hot dog off the craft service table, got caught. The person fired him, not only fired him, but said to him, "You will never work in this town again." And Bublé
was off. The classic.
The classic. Wow. Gave him the classic.
That's amazing.
I'm just picturing someone shouting, probably a mispronunciation of Bublé across.
Yeah.
Oh, Bubbles! Bubbles!
Bubbles!
take your
hot dog.
From East London, of course. Yeah, Bubbles! Yeah.
Oi, Bubbles! Yeah.
You'll never amount to anything! He would have been like, hot diggity dog. I'm out of here.
I got my lunch.
Well, that's to wrap this up, the book, The X-Files, The Official Archives, Cryptids, Biological Anomalies, and Parapsychic phenomena is available from 15th of September, I believe. So this, by the time this podcast, this particular episode will already be out, I think. So it's available now, we can pretty much say, I think.
And written by a hardcore fan, written with passion. Like, that's the difference.
Honestly, this is the, I mean, a lot of people wonder that whenever there's an official book done on a TV show or a film, but genuinely, you know, my 16-year-old self tuning in to see it on the BBC. I can still remember the night because it was trailered really heavily up to being broadcast back in 94. And, you know, just that's been my favourite show ever since. So it's really weird to put this project together and then see it, you know, last night for the first time, see it in the flesh, so to speak. So, but, you know, amazing. It's an amazing show. So I think it's a good one to have as a favourite show.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You can't go wrong, and yeah, congratulations again on a perfect piece of history, and to be officially part of the of one of the world's biggest phenomenon, which is oddly a show about phenomenons.
Thank you so much, guys. I've been listening to the show for years, and it's very surreal to be chatting to you guys about cryptids and cryptids in this book. It's got this weird meta reflection via some echo chamber experience. So it's my honor, and it's been so much fun. Thank you so much, guys.
Awesome. Thank you.
Oh, brilliant.
Awesome. What a nice guy.
Yeah. So good.
And a privilege to have someone else to talk to besides you two. I love you guys, but just another voice, you know?
He was good. I'd get rid of us two. I'd get rid of the usuals. Get another.
Yeah.
Oh, I've written it down. You're slowly moving away from your position buttons as a constant. You're now in the possible to go segment.
Oh,
on my
I'm excited about that because I've always thought I was in the possible to go. So to know that I was actually
you've only just moved into it.
That's like knowing hearing that you're a B student when all along you thought you were a C student. You're like, I'm now a C student.
You thought you were in the only got a few minutes left column.
Yeah. You know when you're playing pinball and you go, oh, this is my last ball, and then it goes down, and it goes, no, you still got one left, and you go, oh, it's better than I thought it was. That's where I live my whole life.
Well, it's great being you. Lucky you. Now, we are coming to the end of the show, but we do have quickly enough time for a segment we haven't done for a while. It's called Notice Board.
Notice Board.
What, you didn't notice it?
No, it's too bored.
Notice Board.
Dan, I believe you have some noticing.
Yeah, well, I noticed one thing this week. I'm currently reading a book called Memoirs and Misinformation by Jim Carrey and Dana Vachon. It's a sort of novel slash memoir of Jim's life. So he mixes insanity with truth. And there was a sentence in it which caught me for this show particularly, which is that he had Jim Carrey had an uncle called Dez, who was shot on the way to a party while wearing a Bigfoot costume because someone mistook him for Bigfoot and tried to take him down. So I thought, oh, wow, okay. But the thing is that this is a book where you can't tell what the truth is. You can't tell if that's real or not. But there's so much in it that is tangibly real that this could be real as well. So I've been trying to investigate it. I've been online. I've been looking into it. Was his uncle killed in a Bigfoot costume? And I didn't get anywhere. And then just yesterday, I was on the phone, had a Zoom call with Dana Vachon, who is the co-author of this book. So I asked him, I said, is it true that his uncle was killed while wearing a Bigfoot costume? And sadly, well, fortunately, it's not true. It was completely made up. But it was a last-minute joke that Jim Carrey added to the book and refused to budge on. He thought it was the funniest thing that his uncle would have been killed while wearing a Bigfoot costume, so much to the point that the one thing that Dana let him keep it in the book, the one thing that he managed to talk him out of is Jim wanted to dedicate the book to Dez, his made-up uncle, who was killed in a Bigfoot costume. That's how much he loved that joke. The whole book was going to be dedicated to his uncle killed in a Bigfoot costume.
That is so awesome.
So anyway, that's what I noticed this week. That was
my notice. And the only other notice that I have is the Texas Bigfoot Conference, which is still happening this year, as far as I know. I've got to promote it here. October 16th to the 18th, 2020. And that is in, of course, Texas, hence the name. That happens every year, and it's still happening this year. Bigfoot presentations, physical evidence, track casts, and more. So please, those of you that are in Texas and listening, go to the conference. And yes, Craig, Woolheater, we promise one day the Cryptid Factor will make it there. But it, once again, won't be this year.
No, definitely not this year. And guys, I have one some message has just come through, which I think is worth the notice board. Series 4 has just been commissioned of Ear My Qualm.
It's got a new title.
I can't believe they've changed the title in the fourth season.
No, what's it called? Settle My Qualm. No, divulge. What's it called?
Divulge
My Qualm.
Divulge.
Series 4.
You know, things always fall over in the fourth series. I can't believe that. I knew they were going to have a meeting about changing the titles because we did a Zoom call in November and I said, don't you dare change that. And someone had it in their head. It's going to be called Ear My Qualm. My suspicions is it's turning into a podcast now. It sounds like it to me because it's the airwaves. How dare they get away from that? The word divulge was one of the main sellers of the whole show.
Oh yeah.
Oh, hang on. Speaking of which, I've just received an email. You have been commissioned to write the book buttons. This is your first. Yeah. You're going to be an author. You're doing the scripted book of Divulge My Qualm, season 4, Ear My Qualm, in quotations. Oh, you've got to write the book about why the title was changed. Oh, that'll be fun. Congratulate. Oh, that's amazing.
Can I call the book Write My Qualm? Because Air My Qualm's a podcast.
I can't see why not. But you know what I really think?
What?
I think we should head off. I think that's the end of the show this week. It's been amazing. Love to talk to you all as usual. Dan, I can't believe you're still in the complete darkness there. There he goes. All right. See you, boys.
Okay. Have a lovely day.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Right, my qualm.
Right, my qualm.